So we're waiting on Dr. James to arrive, otherwise we'll start with Ricky's first. So let's go with 2139 first. Patrice, can you work on your own call? And then we'll go back to the top and see Dr. James.
Here she is.
Here she is. Time to get set up.
Do you want me to go ahead and start with the case 2139?
Yeah, let's go ahead and do that while Dr. James gets set up. We have not done that. So first, we got to call this meeting to order. Please turn off or mute all electronic devices. And Dr. Wright, would you please do the roll call?
Yes. Dr. Byrne.
Here.
Ms. Krieger.
Here.
Ms. Frost.
Here.
Dr. Heinrich. Dr. James.
Here.
Mr. Lodi.
Here.
Ms. Solomon.
Here.
And Dr. Wright is here. We do have quorum.
All right, so let's start off with case 2139. We got to get on the phone before I start reading. Case number 2939 in regards to Tatiana Seguro Elizondo, DBM. And Tracy, would you read us the summary, please?
Yes, case 2139, the complainant is Christine Henderson Starr. The respondent is Tatiana Seguro Elizondo, DBM. On March 10th, 2020, Othello, a 4-year-old male German Shepherd, was presented to respondent due to a swelling on the dog's right hind leg. Respondent performed a fine needle aspirate of the mass, which revealed the dog had an abscess. Medical management was elected and antibiotics were dispensed. The dog was discharged with recommendations for surgical intervention if the abscess did not resolve. The following day, the dog was worse, therefore complainant reached out to respondent. Although respondent was not working that day, she returned complainant's call, apologized for not dispensing pain medication, and offered to perform radiographs. Complainant elected to seek a second opinion. Later that day, the dog was presented to Alta Vista Veterinary Hospital to have the swelling evaluated. Due to the progression of lethargy and enlargement of the swelling, it was recommended to lance and treat the abscess under sedation. On March 15, 2020, the dog was rechecked at Alta Vista Veterinary Hospital. The limb swelling had resolved and the abscess was much improved. And the committee, it was moved and seconded that the committee recommend the board dismiss this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
Okay, we do not have a respondent. We have the complainant on the phone. Would you please state your name for the record? Thank you. I can give you up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Okay, thank you. So, yes, when we woke up
Thursday morning, a fellow was jumping at his nose was running. He had a demonstration stump on his left side bed. We called the plumber with Dr. Segura. She did was drown. Her passage was still post 10. She did not recommend anything. She gave me a prescription for 875 milligrams of amoxicillin and told me to return in 3 weeks. We left. That morning, the next morning, Othello's leg had swollen. It was like he had a football hanging off of his leg. He had a fever. He was lethargic. He was in pain. He was drooling and his nose was running. I called the bed at 7:30. I left a voicemail. Dr. Segura called me back at approximately 10:30. She told me there are no vacancies and she recommended I go to the vet. Both of the vets she recommended no vacancies. So we called Alta Vista. Alta Vista took Othello in and did emergency surgery that very same day. And I feel that Dr. Segura did not show any compassion, care, or concern for my dog. And I feel like she should be reimbursed for the charges and she should be reprimanded because she also misdiagnosed my female dog. So I'm not happy with her. And here's my daughter. You can add her comments also.
Hi, I would like to add that by the time Othello actually was taken in and seen by the doctor, his leg had swelled to the point where his leg looked like the elephant man. It looked like it was like a cantaloupe or larger size of fluid just hanging off of his leg, and he could hardly walk. And this took place within a matter of like 2 or 3 hours from the time we actually called Alta Vista, drove down there, and then we had to wait to be seen because it was on an emergency basis. And then from that time to getting him into the room, his leg had almost quadrupled in size. So I do have pictures on my phone of what his leg looked like after they had lanced it, after the procedure. I do not have pictures of it before because I was so alarmed at what was going on, and I wasn't sure if he was going to have his leg amputated. We were just terrified. That's what I would like to add.
Thank you very much. Dr. Byrne, you are the lead on this case.
Yes, I just have a couple of questions to ask you. Did on your first visit, did the doctor offer you the option of surgical lancing of the abscess?
No, she did not. She did not do anything except for aspirate the blood from the lung or the abscess. And she gave me the prescription for amoxicillin and told me to come back in 3 weeks.
Was there any discussion of a medical versus a surgical route for to manage an abscess?
No, there was no discussion. I'm going to say, I think because they were closing, it was like 5:30 that evening, and they were rushing to get out.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Also, I forgot to ask the doctor at Alta Vista, she told me that the abscess was so large that it had split his muscle.
I would like to add something also. When I talked to Dr. Segura the next day, I asked her why didn't she do something that night, and she told me that a pinroll strain would have been too expensive. And I was like, okay, but there should have been something else that you could do. And she said, no, there's nothing else that she could do. And therefore, she was recommending that I go to these other vets because they were booked and could not see our fellows that day.
Okay, so at this point, we'll end our testimony, and Dr. Byrne, you'll lead the discussion.
Okay, so I personally feel like we're seeing the dog on the first day, starting the animal on the Clavamox seemed like a reasonable thing to do, as it was continued even the subsequent veterinarian's visit. I guess the Well, the questions I would have would be whether or not the respondent was offered the complainant the option of the surgical treatment route as a primary route versus a secondary route. And I guess it's unclear. When I read the medical records, it seems that that was the case without having him here testify. It's hard to know. I don't feel like that the initial doctor did anything that fell below the standard of care, considering the time frame was from 3:10 to 3:11, and she wasn't working on 3:11, but did actually help facilitate a referral to a secondary clinician that actually did perform and did continue the same antibiotic therapy with the addition of some others. So I guess with that being said, I would probably make a motion to agree with the investigative committee and make a recommendation to dismiss this issue with no violation.
Well,
before I second that, I'm going to make a comment because just going through the records and everything, I mean, it does say on here that we discussed that we would need general anesthesia and a drain if this doesn't resolve. And unfortunately, when we did something like this presenting before close, not too long before close, there's no possible way that's going to happen that same day. It's just not going to happen. If we get there 30 minutes before close and have to do a 3-hour procedure, including recovery time before this animal can be discharged, it's not going to happen that night. It doesn't matter. My staff's gone. We have other things going on. Unfortunately, that's just not a possibility. So it seems like, to me, based on records, based on testimony, that's likely what happened. There might have been some miscommunication in the fact that if this doesn't resolve, we need to come back and actually go under anesthesia at that point. And I think miscommunication is a possibility here for the confusion, but I don't think that there's an actual medical problem here. I see what happened, and this is not an issue. It's an unfortunate situation, but it's not a statute violation by any means. So I'm going to second that motion.
There's a motion on the floor and a second to dismiss case 2139. Is there any further discussion?
Do I get to add?
No, that part's all done. Thank you. So one thing that I came across in the records initially on the visit to the respondent, the mass was approximately 10 centimeters and unulcerated. And that's why she did the aspirin. So, I mean, that's a pretty big growth between at that time, which 10 centimeters, a fairly small lump. You know, something you want to look at, something that definitely want to take care of, but fairly small versus the next day when it's cantaloupe or football size.
Yeah.
By the time they get to Alta Vista. I don't know that you could look at a 10 centimeter lump mass abscess and predict whether it's going to blow up or not.
No, it's really hard. I mean, bacteria divides very fast, the body reacts very fast, and pus can form very, very quickly. I mean, think about waking up the morning of prom way back in high school, and you have that big pimple on your face that wasn't there the night before. I mean, things can happen very, very quickly when it comes to inflammation. So unfortunately, again, that's not a issue of statute violation or inappropriate administration of medications or treatment. It's just how the body works.
Right. Plus, the Alta Vista medical records on initial visit categorize it as a greater than 10 centimeter growth. So I mean, they kind of had it kind of safe somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
All right, motion on the floor is to dismiss. Any further discussion? And all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And opposed? That motion passes. 2139 is dismissed. Thank you for joining us on the phone today. Okay, and Dr. James, if you're ready, we're going to go to that report back.
Okay.
There you are. All right, so next up we will do cases 2145, 2146, 2147, and 2148. So we have 10 complaints for each. Tracy, would you read us the summary, please?
Yes. Case 2145, case 2145 is regarding the complainant Frederick Mellons and Ashiana Villiter, and the respondent is Courtney Deer, UVM. 2146 is the same complainant, and the respondent is Nicolette Meredith. Case 2147 is the same complainant, and the respondent is Jonathan Schneer. And in case 2148, the complainant is also the same, and the respondent is Carmen McGee, Emmons, DVM. On June 19, 2020, Cody, a 14-year-old male Pomeranian, was presented to First Pet Veterinary Centers after a two-day history of collapsing. The dog had multiple medical issues and was under the care of an internal medicine specialist and neurologist. Diagnostics were conducted. It was initially suspected the dog had IMHA, and a blood transfusion was eventually performed at Blue Pearl. The dog continued to decline, was evaluated and hospitalized for care and treatment at First Pet Veterinary Centers for possible seizures. The dog was obtunded and worsened despite treatment. All of the dog's care providers were concerned the dog's prognosis and quality of life due to the dog's mental status not returning. On June 26, 2020, the complainants elected to humanely euthanize the dog. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded that the board dismiss this issue with no violation. And that motion was approved with a vote of 4-0. And that was in respect to case 2145, 2146, 2147, and 2148.
We do not have the respondents. We have the Mr. Stoll?
Correct.
Monitoring speaking?
Monitoring only.
Okay. Mr. Stoll monitoring for the respondents. And we do have the complainants in the case. Mr. Millens and represented by attorney?
Yes.
Would you care to make a statement?
Yes, we would.
Mr. Stoll? I have a short statement and he does as well.
Come on up. Have a seat. If you want to separate, you can, or if you want to sit together, you can.
And just a second, we got some procedural thing. Please state your name for the record.
Frederick John Mylands III.
And counsel, your please state your name for the record.
Kyle O'Dwyer.
Thank you. And I give you up to 5 minutes to address the board, and I guess that's per case.
My statement has actually been prepared, assuming that we would be on a truncated schedule, and I managed to fit all of it into probably a 5 or 6 minutes.
That's great. And so the attorney will speak as well, correct?
That's correct. So I think that should be sufficient.
All right, so please address the board.
Yes. First of all, I think that the summary, while accurate on the surface, neglects basically a lot of the detail and context that's relevant. I was not expecting that when I prepared the statement. Unfortunately, the statement itself was written under significant time constraints. My attorney and I didn't receive the recording of the open meeting from the investigative board until yesterday afternoon, I believe. And there's also, again, some significant confusion about how much time would be permitted to deliver this. So I do have to apologize in advance, it's a little bit rough. My complaints regarding Dr. Deer and Dr. Meredith, the first pet, I think were largely in order taken out of context. They ignore that we could have chosen completely different options for Cody's subsequent care if we'd known Dr. Deer was advocating for euthanasia as early as June 21st. She never made any reference of this to myself or to my wife. So we continue to believe the first pet would be a suitable candidate for subsequent emergency treatment. But also note that this recommendation was not suggested to us during further examination by Dr. Schneer or by a referring cardiologist, Dr. Matthews. They also ignore my complaint regarding lack of notification regarding Cody's deterioration overnight on June 24th. When we saw him that night, he was awake and highly drugged, yet the next morning we received a phone call indicating that he was essentially a vegetable. 24-hour monitoring, but we were not notified of this decline. They also ignored my complaint regarding First Test misrepresentation of services. Their marketing materials, and in fact, Dr. Meredith, both indicated that internal medicine and critical care were available, but were never actually available for Cody. Other concerns regarding Cody's care at the facility, selective filtering of information, and conflicting information regarding the status also remained largely ignored or unaddressed. Has been concerns regarding the near constant string cluster seizures he was having at final discharge that were never broached to us at any point during his hospitalization. My complaint against Dr. Shear was also misrepresented in ignorant of context. I do not expect any person in any profession to always be on call. That's obviously unrealistic. However, Cody had been under Shear's care every other day at Blue Pearl for the better part of a week and was actually slated to be hospitalized overnight on June 24th until a change in plan very late day. My wife and I actually packed the bag expecting we would be over there overnight. When he indicated that Cody was ready for discharge, I specifically inquired if he would be available to coordinate because given the complexity of the case, I didn't believe a random facility could necessarily just pick this up. Unfortunately, you know, he said yes, that that was acceptable, that he would be available, and then turned out not to be. Had we known that, we could have elected other options post-discharge. Had we known, perhaps, that he felt that they weren't cut out to do that at that facility, he could have referred us to another facility with better continuity of care, much like he referred us up to Dr. Matthews for a cardiology consult. None of that happened. And once Cody was discharged and then subsequently declined within 2 or 3 hours, Dr. Schneer was effectively unreachable and spoke with us only once regarding Cody's condition. He wasn't even aware of Cody's death until the following week. Regarding Dr. Yeamans, the committee has reduced the entirety of my complaint to concerns regarding tenosynovial side effects and the size of an anal syringe, despite these being really just illustrations of an overall pattern of experience during her care. Concerns regarding her overall conduct, her engagement in Cody's case, or mismanagement of Cody's case were almost completely ignored during their discussion. Any concern regarding any synergistic interactions with the medications he was on was not discussed, nor was it discussed regarding his progressive inability to walk. This was actually attributed by Yeamans and Sterling to a neurological defect, despite we had MRIs over a period of years indicating no serious deterioration in his brain, even post-stroke, aside from the actual stroke damage. And we also managed to significantly improve his mobility with a minor medication adjustment by his family veterinarian. And the investigators also seem to think that Yeamans was perhaps not the doctor primarily responsible for Cody's neurological care. He was, in fact, actually a patient of Dr. Cudden, originally at Annick, but was de facto transitioned to Yeamans' care because Cudden was repeatedly unavailable. We only learned over a period of months that he was actually no longer even practicing at the facility. And had we known that, we would likely have elected to perhaps seek care outside the state as we did during Cody's pheochromocytoma. But unfortunately, we were not explicitly made aware of that until months later. That was actually listed still in the complaint. The only other thing that I would like to say, and it is somewhat personal, is I take great exception to this refrain and the subtext that myself or my wife are somehow in denial regarding Cody's mortality. I've lived with a chronic medical condition since I was 4 years old. I saw my mother die of metastatic ovarian cancer over a period of 3 years. Saw my father die of lung cancer. I'm aware that people die. This isn't about whether or not he would die. It's about the conduct. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. And counsel?
Thank you. First off, I want to thank you all for your time today and for giving this case its due attention. As I was preparing for the hearing, looking at the agenda, obviously it indicates the mission statement is for the board to protect the health, safety, and welfare of the general public and the animals by enforcing the licensing standards. And so As I take a look at these four matters, obviously Mr. Milans and Ms. Billiter took extensive time and effort in putting together these complaints and reviewing the information. They care deeply and did care deeply about Cody at that time. And so from my review, the board's role here is to decide, number one, what happened, because at times there are conflicting stories. Number two, whether what happened violated a statute or rule in the licensing statutes and rules. And then number three, if so, what repercussions are necessary. And so, as Mr. Milans indicated, we are requesting that the board find that there were violations here at a minimum of R3-11-501 sub 1, which is kind of the broad ethical standard, and especially is applicable to owners of animals, that a veterinarian, a medical veterinarian, show due respect to the owner of the animal. In this case, Mr. Milans described various things that we believe rose to that standard, and I'll just point out a couple. That obviously in the 5 minutes per case, it's not going to be exhaustive. We filed a fairly detailed complaint and information, but as to Dr. Meredith in 2146, she had communicated with Dr. Schneer at one point about what to do when Cody was declining. And Dr. Schneer had indicated to her that, you know, there were alternative procedures that could be pursued to see if there was a possibility that he would be able to continue to be alive. Talked about MRIs or things of that nature. And that conversation was on June 25th, if I recall correctly. None of that was conveyed to Mr. Milans. What was conveyed to him was that everyone was in agreement that Cody, it was time for him to pass away. And so that's a significant issue when I look at giving due respect to the owners. Mr. Milans described with Dr. Deer in 2145 the failing to apprise him that even a week before she was of the opinion that the owners weren't at the point of letting go of Cody, that it was time for him to go. And that was a week before he actually passed away, but that was never communicated to them. And as Mr. Milans indicated today, if he had known that, he would have sought other emergency medical veterinary assistance. Mr. Milans described Dr. Schneer's failure to follow up on his representation to Mr. Milans that he'd be available for quick consult if Cody went back into a emergency situation. As Mr. Milans said, he wasn't expecting at 3 a.m. if he got a call that he'd call right back. But it wasn't until the following afternoon that there was any kind of response. And so that's one issue. As to 2148, Dr. McGee Yamens, it was striking to me that at the time that she was speaking with the owners about euthanasia, about the end of life, that when they asked whether some other procedures should be done, she laughed. If that is showing due respect to the owners, I just don't see any way it could be. Now, obviously, it's up to you to decide whether these are violations, and if they are violations, what repercussions should occur. And we're not saying here today that due to these violations, their licenses should be revoked or anything as significant of that nature. But they are violations, and if these things repeatedly happen and the board looks back and sees that, well, these were dismissed without a violation, then that's a concern, because repeatedly violating it when these violations are then dismissed the public is not protected. And as that is the mission statement of the board, my clients would ask that the board find, at least find violations occurred in these matters and what the necessary repercussions should be. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. That will end our testimony. Dr. James, you are the lead on this case.
Yeah, so these are difficult cases because there's so much going on with multiple different doctors. So I think it's going to be best if we talk about them individually, not only when they're grouped, I group them, but this one, I think, especially hearing kind of what was written as far as what the complaints against each doctor were, and then hearing additional ones today, I think
they are actually the same complaints, ma'am. There's no new material or anything.
There were a couple variances that I noticed that I was jotting down as I was listening. So I think it'll be best to go one by one. If I think starting with 2146, which was Dr. Meredith, who on this most recent episode was the initial doctor that saw the doc.
No, that's incorrect.
Excuse me, surgeon. Your part of the testimony is ended unless we ask you a question. No, you stay right here because I'm going to ask you a question.
I know. Come on, Sam.
I'm going to ask you a question.
Sure.
It's procedural, not personal.
Mr. Lowe, you may want to explain to his attorney when the attorney comes back what the process is.
Yeah.
Just to make it perfectly clear.
He's declining to return.
Okay. So we will proceed, and I don't know whether you can answer the questions I was going to ask him or not, but I'll ask him and see if I get an answer. Proceed. I'll ask him at the appropriate time.
All right. So going back to when this dog first came into first pet, maybe I should have said it that way. We'll take Dr. Meredith as the doctor that saw the dog. So I was going to start with that one. It seems like in looking at that case, you know, there were concerns about the professional communication and how well things were being communicated. I think mostly with Dr. Meredith, from what I can see going through the medical record, from a medical perspective, everything was done appropriately. And then Dr. Meredith later transferred the case to Dr. Deere for overnight follow-up, or at least some follow-up at some point. But that was the initial transaction, and I did not see anything in the case outside of, I do think that a case like this, there's so much going on that communication becomes critical, and being able to talk through all of these and with four different doctors involved in the case and trying to coordinate everybody, some of the communication could have been lost, but ultimately I didn't see anything from a medical perspective. And I do feel like they did their best to communicate. So in case 2146, I would make a recommendation that we
agree with the committee's findings of no violations of the Practice Act or rule.
Second.
Yeah, motion on the floor and a second to dismiss case 2146. Is there any further discussion?
Mr. Lippe, the complaint left, right? We can't ask him questions.
Yeah, he left.
The lawyer's still here.
Yes.
And his wife is in the audience, but unfortunately the complaint left.
And if you guys have a lot of questions, I'm fine. We're going to get used to an informal if we think that's the way to go. I don't want to not give you the opportunity to ask questions. I'll let you hear it, and then we'll vote.
So I'll ask the attorney, and I would ask this, at the end of all four, but it doesn't matter. Do you know how long that they owned this dog?
I don't know specifically.
12 years.
How long?
12 years.
12 years, Mr.
So it's probably two years old when they got it. And then I would ask, what is Mr. McMillan's profession? Does he have any medical background?
He does not have a medical background. I believe he's a programmer. And so he's learned significantly along the way because the complaints were largely drafted by him. I've learned a lot through this process as well.
Okay, and then my follow-up to that is, because it was well-written, and the investigative committee commented on that, they had very few, if any, questions. Because it was so well lined out, put together, and coherently in a timeline, I mean, it's better prepared than we see a lot of that. A lot better prepared. And he used the correct medical language in the correct places, as far as I could tell. I'm going to let the veterinarians correct me if I'm wrong, but we don't see that ever. So it was a first, and it was nice. It made this easy to follow, easy to go through. So there is no medical background other than what he's picked up along the way, caring for his parents, caring for his dog. And then the final question I was going to ask is, they submitted a lot of different videos, and I would like to know if they believe any of those videos shared with us show normal movement and behavior.
I don't remember what's on the videos. Some of them were just when Cody was quite drugged up and couldn't walk because of the level of medication, and others were.
Are you able to hear her? Should she come up to a microphone?
She's come to the microphone.
Ashana Billiter.
Thank you.
I don't remember exactly what the videos were because my husband was mostly dealing with this. I believe most of the videos were showing just how drugged Cody was most of the time from the medications from his neurologist.
Because I thought in the narrative that was submitted by the attorney saying in the description of the videos that there were some of them showing him in a better state than others.
That is correct.
And, okay. So I would ask my veterinarian colleagues or anybody else on the panel, when I looked at those, I didn't see any normal movement or behavior. Even the ones where he could walk, it was not a normal gait. It was not a normal movement. The mentation wasn't normal. I didn't see a normal. I didn't see a really con. Yes, I could definitely tell he wouldn't get up, but I really couldn't see a movement contrast. Of course, he wasn't moving in the ones where he wouldn't get up. So those were the questions to Dr. Jane that I was going to ask for all four cases. So the motion on the floor, and as a second, is to dismiss case 2146. Is there any further discussion?
Mr. Lahey, I don't know.
it is really hard to ask these questions if he's not there. I did have some questions regarding the complaint summary on the first that he submitted for Dr. Meredith, but I don't really know how to ask them if he's not there.
I would, this is Dr. Wright, I would just ask him, and if his attorney can answer him or if his wife can answer him, maybe you can get some answers that way, but might as well.
Mr. We're going to have a lot of questions. We should just move to an informal, because this is just the initial investigative review, so we can move on.
Well, again, I think that they're general questions, though. They're not, they're general questions with the communication complaint. I don't know that I have, you know what I'm saying, I don't know that I have questions for the doctor specifically. It would kind of depend on the answer to these two questions I have.
So I'd say, then go ahead and ask them, and then we can decide if we want to move on to whatever formal or.
Okay, so the first question is regarding the complaint of Cody having bells on him to alert the team of any seizure activity. The complaint is that he wasn't being monitored. So that's the first question as far as, I guess, what the specifics are to that concern or complaint. And the second was the concern about not being apprised of any significant changes, just trying to understand what the significant change is. Again, not that there weren't medical changes, but what his definition of significant was, because I think that that's a very broad statement. So I just wanted to ask the question on those two items.
As for the bells on the collar, I know they said he was being watched. I also know that several times we went back to see him while he was at first vet, and they claim that a vet tech was in there at all times, but there was not when we were in there. So perhaps eyes on all the time is a bit extreme, but when we visited him for like 5 minutes, which was about the amount of time we were allowed, there was often no one else in the little enclosed ICU area except for us. As for his decline in his state, when we saw him, when we dropped him off that night, he was obviously drugged because we had to give him meds when we had the large seizure, but by the next morning, he was basically a vegetable. It was a very steep decline. And we were not informed overnight until we got the scheduled call, I think at 6 a.m. or 8 a.m. I do not remember at this point.
And I would also just note that they did tell them any time of the night, if there's something significant going on, call us. Not just this check-in call in the morning, but any time, give us a call.
Okay. Any other discussion? And I guess Dr. James, I wasn't necessarily asking these questions part of my, I want to know, I'm curious, and it certainly affects my train of thought, which direction I'm going to go. But I wanted to ask them, and I wanted the response for the complainant more than for myself. Just try to help them work things out in their own mind. And he's not here, so that kind of shoots that in the foot. It's not going to happen. But it wasn't necessarily that I need or feel the inclination that needs to have been formal. Just want to make that point clear. All right, again, the motion on the floor is to dismiss 2146. Any further discussion? Seeing none, vote, all those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? That motion passes. 2146 is dismissed. And next, or go ahead, pick whichever of the remaining three you want.
Then I would look at 2145, which is Dr. Deere. And here, you know, the part that I kind of feel like we need to discuss a little bit is whether, I mean, from my medical perspective, I think it's one thing for a veterinarian to feel like the end might be near. And when is it right to start communicating that to an owner? Or if you're still doing everything medically correct and everything that you could be doing, your opinion may or may not matter at that point. It's not your decision. If the dog isn't suffering and you're doing everything medical that would be done, even if you felt you could save the dog, I'm not sure that it necessarily changes the outcome, although I do understand why the owners would have wanted to know that. But in thinking about practice just laying it out, I'm not sure how often a veterinarian would necessarily say that unless they felt like the dog was suffering. I don't know if I'm looking at Dr. Wright, mainly because I feel like it's kind of a veterinary, I don't think there's any statute or rule that necessarily says you have to say anything unless the dog's suffering, but.
Yeah, we have to kind of be the advocates for the animals and sometimes be a reasonable voice to clients. I know I had to have that when I lost my dog in January. I mean, I own a hospital, I own everything, all the tools, everything inside of it. I could do anything I needed to, and my dog still died at an emergency hospital. It is what it is, unfortunately, sometimes, and there's just a lot of things we can't deal with. And emotionally, in that moment, I think the doctor does have a responsibility to say, look, this is not gonna happen, and all we're doing is prolonging the suffering of this pet. And that's a hard conversation to have. It's a horrible conversation to have. I never want to have that conversation with a client again, but I know it's going to happen probably within the next week. I mean, that's the fact of life in veterinary medicine is we have to advocate for them, and sometimes the best way to advocate is to take away that pain through euthanasia. Not a fact I like, but one thing I had to accept as a doctor is I may win cases from time to time, but I'm going to lose the patient ultimately every time. 100% of the time, I will always lose. And we have to be reasonable and cognizant of that fact and not prolong that suffering for no reason. In that, we also have to kind of, communication is in general what's going on here. I don't think there's a medical question in this case at all. It's all about communication. We have to look at kind of, I think, all factors here. I mean, we're looking at this from back, we weren't involved. We have to look at both sides, look at the evidence that's presented to us in all forms. And when I'm looking through, there's some questions I have on reasonableness in general. And I think there was just not a full meeting of the minds here, and I don't think there possibly could have been. So there are certain aspects of a case that the veterinarian is gonna discuss with the client, that we're gonna talk about these kinds of things. This is what we're gonna do, this is what I recommend, this is the hope, and this is the plan. But we can't talk about absolutely everything, and I think the expectation was that that the veterinarians were going to speak about absolutely everything here. And the reason I say that is looking at the conversations that happened, there's a conversation about, is this medication affecting cytochrome P450, and what do we do with interactions with other medications? That's not a conversation I'm typically having with a client. That's pathophysiology, that's pharmacokinetics and medications, that's reasons I spent years and years in college. That's not a conversation I can have. It's not a conversation I'm gonna have, especially in a very busy environment right now. That's not time I can take. And I think the fact that those kinds of conversations weren't happening when the client wanted that and the veterinarian's like, look, this is not stuff that we can really talk about, even if we can. I don't think that there was gonna be a possibility for a meeting of the minds because of that kind of evidence I'm seeing. So I think this is all a communication issue. There's no medical issues that I'm seeing here. This is all communication. I don't think there is a way to have avoided this from day one.
So on this case specifically on 45, it looks like, you know, the dog obviously was, they were trying different medications and changing things, and the dog obviously became more sedate overnight. And the owner wasn't called. I think that's part of this whole communication discussion, right? But I also go, if you're giving a drug that you know causes sedation, you're kind of expecting that. I don't know that you would necessarily call because you're expecting that to happen.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like this happened and we didn't know why it happened. So I guess I go, I don't know that it would have alarmed me that the dog was becoming more sedate because you would have expected. So I wouldn't have known that I would have necessarily thought to call and been like, the dog's doing what we thought it would do.
Well,
you know what I, like, yeah. I just.
No, that's very true. And we also have to look in the fact of, again, what is communicated, what needs to be communicated, and what doesn't. We know at this point euthanasia was off the table. That was not going to happen. It was said in here that the clients didn't want to consider euthanasia. So if that's the case, and I have to give this medication, there's going to be side effects. What's the communication portion of it? I mean, I'm already put in a corner by saying we're not going to euthanize, so I have to treat somehow. Well, this is the medication I have to use. Side effects, come or go, whatever it's going to be, I have to use it if we're going to have a chance. So those are kind of, again, I'm not going to call and talk about every single time why I chose this, what is the reasoning behind this antibiotic or that antibiotic, this kind of stuff. Those are things that we're not going to just discuss necessarily all the time, and we don't have time to do it. I mean, that's just not, I've had many family members in the hospital, and I've asked many questions, and those things just don't get answered. That's not, I mean, that's not a medical problem, that's not a statute violation, there's just, not, it's not possible to answer certain things. It's not reasonable. So yeah, I mean, when we know what direction we're going, treatment, come hell or high water, it doesn't really matter what the side effects are going to be at that point. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I didn't see medical issues with this case. In fact, this doctor actually consulted with quite a few other doctors multiple times, reached out to try and make sure everybody was aligned. Like, I kind of felt like there was a lot going on that would have probably helped these owners understand if they had been communicated, but I can see why she didn't. You know what I mean? Like, she was kind of trying to get everything together. And I don't see anything medically that would have been done differently. So I agree with you, if anything, it would be communication. So I guess, unless others have more questions that they want to get answered regarding the communication piece, then I would say I would make the recommendation on 2145 that we find no violations.
I'll second.
Okay, motion on the floor and second to dismiss 2145. Is there any further discussion?
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to add, I'm very sorry for your loss. And I think it's also very unfortunate that Mr. Mylands chose to leave the hearing room.
Any other discussion? Let's vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion passes. 2145 is dismissed. What's the next one you want to take?
Dr. Yemen's at 2148. So my understanding in looking through what was happening here is Dr. Yemen's was kind of being used, the neurologist has been overseeing this case for quite some time prior to this. You know, there were concerns with the side effects of the medication and the size of the syringe, and then her overall involvement and energy put into the case. I agree with the committee on the size of the syringe, that would not have been an issue in my opinion. And I do think they were looking at the side effects because the reason of changing these medications to control the seizures was to see how can we get the seizures controlled with the least amount of side effects. You're always gonna have some side effects, but so I think that was the whole intent, was trying to figure out which ones were, what the perfect combination was gonna be. I felt like there was communication with this doctor and the other doctors all along. I didn't see where there was a breakdown there where something didn't happen because of the communication. And then I, you know, the other involvement of this doctor was actually reaching out to talk to the owners about what the options were remaining, and that maybe it is time, you know, at that point in the case. So, but I didn't see anything there that was unprofessional or didn't meet our standards. So I would make the motion in 2148 that we find no violations of the practice actor rules.
A motion on the floor and a second to dismiss case 2148. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes, 2148 is dismissed. So that leaves 2147.
2147 is Dr. Schneer. And, you know, I think Dr. Schneer had been working on this case quite actively. I think the biggest concern that the owners had, as well as, you know, kind of what went on in the case, is just availability. And, you know, I think that's a really tough one. It's a he said, she said as to whether he said he'd be available and that wasn't, or whether he thought, oh yeah, I'll be available, like generally speaking, in the next day or so. Like, I don't know how that was said, and you know, maybe there was a miscommunication there. I know we need you to be available at X time, but I felt like her availability had been pretty good throughout the case. So I don't really find any violations, and the care that was provided I felt was medically acceptable. So I'd make a motion in 2147 to find no violations of the practice actor rules.
Second.
Motion on the floor and a second to dismiss case 2147. Any further discussion? I guess I'd kind of add some things in here that I would throw out there that may be hard to hear, but I believe them to be true. I think there were unrealistic expectations from the beginning to end. Before this initial first visit, you're walking in with this dog that has, it might take less time to list what wasn't wrong with it than all the health issues that it did have. It had neurological issues, orthopedic issues, cardiopulmonary disease. I mean, it just goes, and the seizures, I mean, just on and on and on. So, I guess I don't know why the first visit was not for euthanasia.
In many cases, I mean, these owners are clearly highly dedicated to this dog, highly attached to Cody, and they're owners that, as a veterinarian, we all want. We want people that are going to be invested in their animal and take care of their animal and do everything they can within their means for the animal. And I feel like that's what was happening here with Cody. You had very, very engaged owners, and I just feel like that kind of led to this, where the expectations were there, and I think they were met. I mean, I feel like the doctors actually met what should happen in this case. It's just, this is just a very tough one because Cody did have so many issues, and you're right. I mean, if in most cases, Cody would never have made it this far. He made it this far because of the owners and their dedication, but it doesn't mean that at this point in time that these doctors were gonna be able to save Cody longer and do more. It finally had reached that point.
There's a drastic difference between saving a life and prolonging death. And that's what we have to be cognizant of.
So, and then my other, and as much as I enjoyed the detail and being in the specifics in the complaint that we already said we normally do not see, and was so very detailed, the IC had hardly any questions because it was all right there laid out. And that was very nice. But it also struck me as very, very strange. That level of knowledge of the pharmacokinetics and the physiology, it just seemed strange to me. And as I said, with all these different issues, that the first thing on their mind, taking it in there that day, was not euthanasia. It sprung into my head, this is not an accusation, I'm just telling you, maybe I have an overactive imagination. You can blame it all on me that I have an overactive imagination. But this popped into my head, Munchausen syndrome by proxy on the dog. I don't know, maybe it's crazy, but just the addition, I mean, just the all the things put together, not one thing, all of it all put together is kind of like, and I wonder, I don't know.
Well,
I don't know, and I don't think there's anything specifically points to that. There is not. There is not.
Yeah, and I do feel like it
all together made me ask that question in my own head.
Yeah. And I feel like we do have very dedicated owners. And again, you know, I think all of us are very sorry for your loss. It's a tough one, and it's tough when you don't have all the answers and you feel like things weren't done right. So I hope going through the process has helped give some clarity and understanding of what happened. But it's hard regardless, and I do understand that. So
I don't know that anything else plays into it, because I think the emotion and all of that, while we understand it, isn't part of the actual case itself and what we're truly looking at. So while we know it's there and it's expected, it's not really part of the case decision.
One other thing that I'd throw out, the attorney mentioned that we should look at a minimum, is the professional courtesy behavior, whatever. I don't think any of us saw that was particularly lacking. And there are some instances in all four of these cases where it's a he said, she said. Right? And granted, complainants being here lends more weight to their side because they're here to tell us about it versus respondents are not. But then on the other hand, he got up and left. So that leads me to say, okay, this communication problem that was going on was two-way. It wasn't one-way. It was two-way.
Unfortunately, that action today spoke loudly to what happened during this whole case. I have to say it.
So I think, though, like separate from that, because we've already made the motions from medical professionally acceptable procedures, communication, and all that, we should just move forward with voting if we haven't voted on the last one.
No, we have not. Yeah. Motion on the floor is to dismiss the last case, 2147. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? That motion passes. 2147 is dismissed. Thank you for being here today and participating. To section 4, number 2, 2086, regard to Beyond 4 DBN quarterly appearances required by consent agreement, or may we do discuss and take action on information presented.
Good morning.
Good morning. Would you please state your name for the record?
Beyond 4.
Thank you, sir. Do we have a lead on this one?
Yep, that would be me. Well, thank you for being here today. How are usual questions? How are things going?
Yeah, going well. Same old things, but going well.
Good. Your practice is doing well?
Yes.
Good time. Good. You're continuing with your therapy, and that's been helpful as well?
Yep.
Okay. Good. Well, we've reached the one-year mark, which makes you eligible to step down the drug testing from monthly to quarterly, especially since we've seen, you know, all good reports so far. As well as the other members of the committee, I would make a motion to step down the drug testing to quarterly.
Second.
Motion for a second to step down testing to quarterly.
And then everything else will stay the same as far as you'll still come and visit us quarterly for the time being, as well as continue with your therapy as well. But I think that will hopefully help you out a little bit too, having to do that every month. So.
Any further discussion? Since we're doing a legal matter here, let's do a roll call.
Dr. Byrne?
Aye.
Ms. Krieger?
Aye.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. James?
Aye.
Mr. Lohi?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Dr. Wright is an aye. The motion carries.
But we're glad to see things are going so well for you. We appreciate you coming down. Appreciate you following the terms of your agreement, and it's good to see for everybody.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for giving me the opportunity. I appreciate it.
Yes. Great. Okay. Absolutely.
Thank you for
coming. I think that's it. All right. We'll see you again in a few months.
Have a nice day.
Thank you.
It was a long drive for just that short.
I know.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Ford.
Next up, we can do Dr. Roy. So that's number one. Celeste Roy, DVM, monthly appearance as required by consent agreement. Board may review, discuss, take action on information presented. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Dr. Roy.
Good morning, Mrs. Solomon. Can I take my mask off while I speak with you guys?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you so much. In the last month, I've been quite busy with consults still, and I've had three random drug screens. One on April 23rd was negative, and then two from Priority One. One on April 28th was negative, and then on May 10th, I was expecting a positive for a benzodiazepine. I had taken one Valium for my my implant. And so I was expecting it to be positive, and I walked in there and told them it was going to be and to look for it. let's see, I've been going to my weekly relapse prevention, and that's going to be stepped back to every other week soon, because he's pretty impressed. And then I'm requesting permission to go on a cruise to the Galapagos from September 21st to October 6th. So I'm looking forward to that.
Maybe take us with you.
Yes, yes. Very much. I'm very jealous of the Galapagos trip. I was a physical anthropology major in college, and that is like a dream.
It's a veterinarian's dream, too.
Yeah.
All the diversity is going to be really exciting.
Yes.
And I'm also taking diving lessons, scuba diving, so that hopefully, I don't know, because they say that it's more advanced people doing the Galapagos, but maybe there'll be some like beginner dives in Ecuador that I can try.
Be safe.
Yeah, I saw that movie where they left them out in the ocean. And I don't want to do it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
oh,
oh, please don't.
keep the eye on that boat
underneath. Why do you bring that up?
Because that's how my mind works. It's not good.
So it's not a hobby of yours.
Yeah, like, in the pool, that'd be good.
Dr. Roy, once again, it's great to see you again and your continued excellent work. I thank you for the heads up and the proper notifications regarding the diazepam for your implant-based work and the heads up on anticipating the positive result. I am not concerned about this positive result. I will be anxious to
see. I have one today. So I'm going right today.
That's the one I'm going to be anxious to see.
It'll
I'm
be perfect.
That
oh, no, it'll be perfect. I know it'll be perfect.
Okay, great.
I take this very seriously.
Yes, good. I can tell by your efforts and compliance, so, and they're appreciated. Next month, I anticipate that we will be, after next month's appearance, we'll be reducing you down to quarterly, stepping you down as if your compliance continues. I'd like to ask staff a quick question. Are we do a pharmacy profile this month?
I send them in every 90 days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will have to look at them. I feel like you just sent one.
I did just send one, but okay. I do send them every 90 days.
Okay.
What was my last one?
Ms. Sullivan.
I may have overlooked it, but I didn't see a recent one.
I know that she sent one. It's not in the packet. I could be looking for it while you keep talking.
If you don't have it, I can resend it, though.
I would have it because
okay.
You emailed me. I just
need not a copy. As long as we have it, that's the concern. I also would like to bring to your attention item number 36 in your consent agreement, which since next month is the year of being on probation. Item 36 reads, following the end of the first year of state revocation probation, respondent shall undergo a follow-up neuropsychological evaluation with a board-approved neuropsychologist and thereafter as recommended by the evaluating neuropsychologist. So I just wanted to...
Yeah, and I'm going to do that with Dr. Lett, who I already did it with, just to stay.
Great. Pending... I'd like to go ahead and make a motion to, if it requires a motion to approve your travel, pending the favorable report by Dr. Wett.
Okay.
So I'm gonna second that, but I'm just gonna confuse. So you're only asking for like release of the drug testing for those 2 weeks. It's not interfering with the meeting day or anything, is it?
No, it's not interfering with
the
meeting
just the drug
day.
Testing.
Yeah.
Because I was trying to do the math in my head. I'm like, I don't know why you're asking this, but that's what
you're gonna do quarterly. We don't land there.
Yeah. Exactly. So.
Yeah, it definitely won't. I calculated it all out. Yeah. It won't land on any meeting date.
That's
so
what I was
trying to
say.
And then I have another question. If I go on, like, just to go visit my parents for a couple weeks, and I can drug test because I'm just in Northern California, is that okay to just transfer drug testing to somewhere else, or how do I go about something like that? Do people do that?
Technically, the testing center needs to be approved by us.
Okay.
So if you just want to identify one ahead of time, and just let us know so that I can verify it's a legitimate test.
Okay.
Center.
That way we could continue it, you know.
That's something board staff can do, not something we have to do.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Cool, okay.
Okay.
So that should be pretty easy. So I'm going to second that then.
Okay. All right, motion on the floor and second. Further discussion? All those... Well, since we're doing the alternate setting right?
Yeah,
are we alternate? Yeah. So let's do a roll call.
Dr. Byrne?
Aye.
Ms. Krieger?
Aye.
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. James?
Aye.
Mr. Lobe?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
And Dr. Wright is an aye. The motion carries.
And one last item, I'd like to request a special report on the Galapagos when we see you next.
Bring pictures.
So yeah. Have the projector. You can 45-minute presentation.
Not until September 23rd. It's going to be a while. But thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Keep up the great work, Dr. Roy.
And Mr. Loki, Ms. Solomon, it was reviewed, the pharmacy profile, at the April meeting.
Okay.
I see it in the April.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, so let's keep going on the roll here. Let's go down to number 4. Case 2166 in regard to Tressa McLennan, DVM. Quarterly appearance is required by a consent agreement. Board may review to assess the action on information presented. Good morning. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Tressa McLennan.
Thank you.
You guys want me to wear a mask here?
Yeah, you can take it off if you want to there.
Okay.
Thank you. Has anybody signed a leave?
Yes.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Karen McLennan. Can you tell us how you're doing and work-wise and personal-wise and therapy-wise?
It's a very humbling experience. So as far as how I'm doing, I haven't had any urges to use. And today is 109 days sober, if we count alcohol as well.
Yes.
5 months with no other substances, oral substances. So more clear-headed, definitely. I'm on step six now of the 12 steps, which is being entirely ready to remove your defects of character, which I have many.
Don't we all?
Yeah. Yes. And I'm noticing those more as well, going through your steps, character defects of myself, especially in others. I've been going to 3 12-step meetings a week. I have a few that I attend regularly just because they're kind of like my home group, so to speak. I've had 10 urine tests so far. And then one-on-one counseling. I think I've been in about a month, because I switched counselors, about a month of one-on-one counseling weekly. And then I have a weekly substance use disorder meeting on Thursday mornings at 6 a.m. And I don't know if you guys know much about the program I'm in. It's a little different. So I'm in the PAPA program. So my phone is kind of my lifeline, because there's a mobile app that I use to check into meetings. So it's GPS, so I check in, check out. I check every morning at 6 a.m. to see if I have to do a urine test, because I'm required to do, I think, 36 per year, which is a lot, but it takes what it takes. I feel like recovery's going well, definitely. There's been work challenges, as there is in any working environment, but I don't think it's related to anxiety or anything like that. It's more interpersonal things, and challenges with, at this time, needing to work with another doctor, and a doctor that's kind of a newbie in a way. And so that's a very humbling experience as well. And it's putting a strain on our clinic, and so then I feel guilty about it because I want our practice to do well. So there's that's probably my main challenge and things that come up, especially if our office is not very busy. Why are they keeping me on when we have to pay another vet basically to be there on days when me and my colleague aren't working to have coverage? So that's the latest challenge. The initial challenge was until I got the okay to use medication from my colleague. I couldn't use any medications so I wasn't in surgery, I couldn't do euthanasias. It was just a bizarre dynamic, but we've got that figured out. There's gonna be, little things along the way. So that's the biggest challenge now, is just not being able to work by myself and having a so-called, sometimes I think it's a babysitter, but it's not, that's just my words. That's the main thing. But using and recovery, it's going well. I'm very fortunate that I did not have a very low bottom compared to a lot of people that I've seen in recovery. So I'm very grateful for that.
if you have any other questions.
Okay, when you refer to drug access, is that limited to control drugs?
Yes, yeah.
You still have no access to those, correct?
I do not. My colleague will draw up medication.
Right. Victoria, do you have any questions or any compliance issues you'd like to raise?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I don't have any questions, but I would like to share with the board that she has been stellar in her responses. I haven't had to ask for anything. I haven't had to remind her anything. She had things early, so she's been very easy to work with.
Great. That's great to hear, Dr. McLennan. And also,
and the staff is happy, we're happy.
Pardon?
Yes. And the staff is happy, we're happy.
Absolutely. And give yourself an extra pat on the back for being in recovery during a pandemic. Because as you probably read, the relapse rates have increased greatly because of the stress of the pandemic. So congratulations for your continued progress. Keep up the great work.
And just as a add on to that, again, good job on what you're doing, but be careful too, because we all know veterinarians are all that type A personality and that can push us into these kinds of situations. So, I mean, I love the fact that she says that you're very attentive. Reading through here, your sponsor says that you're very attentive and you're working hard and all that kind of stuff, and that's awesome, good job. Just make sure you find that internal happiness too. Don't do that type A to the point where now we relapse because there's an issue. So, except you're doing a good job, awesome. It's just always good to be cognizant because we all know us vets are very type A. It can be our own worst enemy sometimes.
Yeah. Some non-veterinarians
are part of it too. Good job.
Yes. And one, I do have one more quick question. Victoria, were you apprised of the change in counselor? She mentioned she changed counselor.
Yes.
Okay, great. Super.
My counselor is actually, she's had a lot more experience with recovery and 12 steps. So that's the main reason for the change.
That's great. Keep working the program.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here today.
Yeah, appreciate you guys.
Congratulations on your program. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Diane?
It's only 10 o'clock so far. So it's not 11:30 yet.
Okay, I'll hold it. Now let's go back and start at the top of our initial investigative reviews, case 2134. Casey, would you read us a summary, please?
Yes. Case 2134, the complainant is Wendy B. Lee. The respondent is Christopher Menarski, DVM. On August 20th, 2020, Lenny, a 6-year-old male domestic short-haired cat, was presented to VCA Animal Referral and Emergency Center of Arizona for vomiting, lethargy, and hiding. Blood work and radiographs were performed and revealed possible hepatobiliary disease. Hospitalization with IV fluids was recommended, as well as an abdominal ultrasound. Complainant declined. Complainant was then offered subcu fluids, sirenia, and gabapentin, with a recommendation to follow up with the primary care veterinarian the following day. Complainant only wanted the gabapentin, and the cat was discharged. Approximately 6 days later, the cat passed away. Complainant was concerned that the gabapentin was dispensed to the cat with liver issues. Her research indicated that it was contraindicated. Complainant had not followed up with the primary care veterinarian as directed. The respondent is the responsible veterinarian for the premises. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded. The board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
We have no respondent, no complainant, nobody monitoring, and Ms. Frost, you are the lead.
Yes, so reviewing this case, you know, I do have one question for the doctors, or actually any of the board members, as far as there's a lot of medications, right, that are processed or metabolized by the liver. So as far as pain management, at least in my experience, that takes priority for the patient, especially in situations where there is other recommended care. that may even decline or postpone with a recommendation to follow up with a primary care veterinarian. So I guess my question is there a concern there? But as far as my review of the case, I'll just make a motion that way there can be discussion to dismiss with no violation.
Second.
Motion on the floor and a second to dismiss case 2134. Is there any further discussion? Can any of our professionals answer Ms. Frost's question? I think one point you bring up that this particular veterinarian was not involved in the case. So it's kind of, you gotta wonder why they named him. Maybe he's a premise.
My thought was maybe if it was a protocol, right, communication thing when it comes to medications and how far do you go, right, and talking about potential side effects, you know, risk reward, that kind of conversation. That would be the only thing I could match up with this particular case. But again, it's kind of whenever you watch those commercials on medications, a lot of the side effects sound worse than what it's treating. And so again, my question was prioritizing pain management. I've always seen making sure that the patient is comfortable. And so that was just my question was, was there any concern if that wasn't appropriate use of pain management? And if so, then yes, it may not be a case of, is this a protocol thing? It may be, that would have to be a different case altogether, but I don't know that that's even a concern.
Well, they're not talking and they don't look concerned.
Thanks for the description.
You can't even see our faces. That's terrible. We're just sitting here.
So, is there any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of dismissing 2134, say aye.
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 Opposed? That motion passes. 2134 is dismissed. Next up, it's a two-pack for Dr. Wright. 2136, Judith Hammerick, BBM, and 2137, Sheila Montanel, BBM. Tracy, would you read us the summary? Is it the same for both?
Yes, it is. So case 2136 and Judith Hammerick, BBM, and the complainant is Sabrina Gage. And case 2137, the complainant is the same, and the respondent is Sheila Martin Temple, DBM. In June 2020, Buck, a one-year-old male mixed breed dog, was presented to Dr. Hammerich due to the inability to gain weight. Blood work was performed, and cryptosporidium was identified and treated with azithromycin. A maldigestion profile was performed and revealed some abnormalities that were discussed with the complainant, and oral cobalamin was started. In September 2020, Dr. Hammerich's associate, Dr. Martin Temple, rechecked the dog's blood work and recommended stopping the cobalamin. On September 28, 2020, the dog was presented to Dr. Evans Cordova at Red River Animal Hospital in Irving for a second opinion. Radiographs were performed and revealed a severely distended small intestine. Surgical exploration revealed multiple large diverticula throughout the jejunum, which would likely require resection and anastomosis. Due to quality of life issues, complainant elected to humanely euthanize the dog. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded to dismiss this issue with no violation. And the motion was approved with a vote of 5-0. And that was in both case 2136 and case 2137. Yeah.
We have no respondents. Mr. Stoll, monitoring for both?
Correct.
Is there a discount fee for monitoring?
That was a lawyer.
That's right.
It's all the same.
And no complainant. And Dr. Wright, you're the lead on both of those.
I am. So basically looking through this, I mean, the initial diagnostics, treatment plan, and everything is reasonable. I don't see an issue with that. Would x-rays have been nice in the beginning? Yeah. The question is, was not doing them a problem? And that's kind of my sticking point right now. I'm leaning towards no, because again, we did some diagnostic testing, found some reasonable explanations for the signs we're seeing and all that. I mean, x-rays are one of those things that all of us jump to very, very quickly because it's a very simple test to do, and maybe that would have changed things, but again, was not doing them a problem. I'm trending towards no on that, but I would definitely like to have the opinion of anybody else if they think different.
Well, so when the investigative committee was reviewing it and asking their questions, the critical thing with vomiting, and that's a he said, she said. Mm-hmm. Complainant says, well, I told him it was vomiting.
Yeah.
But it's nowhere in the medical record at all. Neither doctor put it in there. And I think they have some very valid points that would have been a sign where any of them would have said, yeah, I need an x-ray. Mm-hmm. But to further to document, to maybe lean one side or the other on the he said, she said, they did vaccinate the dog and give it boosters. And if it was vomiting, they wouldn't have done that.
Typically, yeah, and I mean, going through, you know, I want to read things into the record from what was submitted, but in the very beginning, it was talked about the testing that should be done to follow up on the clinical signs we're seeing, and then if we didn't get the answers, we would talk about additional testing. So, I mean, it was considered at that point, too. The testing that was done came back with an answer that seemed to fit the reason for the signs, so the additional testing wasn't done. So, I mean, there was a cognizant thought, I think. It didn't specifically say x-rays, but it does say additional testing. So I understand, and would an x-ray have changed anything in the long run? I don't know. These kinds of things, probably not a whole lot. But based on that, I guess I'd make a motion to dismiss both 2136 and 2137.
Second.
For which one?
For both.
For both.
Yeah.
Right. On the record. Okay, so I had one question for the veterinarians. Cryptosporidium, how common is that for a parasite in pets?
In small animal, I've never seen it. I remember there was always that lottery in vet school where a student a year getting it and they would lose like 20 or 30 pounds. But the best weight loss ever.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, in small animal, that's why when I saw that, I was like, okay, look at that. I've not seen cases of cryptosporidium in a small animal.
I just wondered.
That's a good question.
I've heard it in humans, but in pets. All right, so motion on the floor. Let's take one at a time. Motion on the floor, case 2136, Dr. Hammerick, is to dismiss, and we have a second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? That motion passes. 2136 is dismissed. Case number 2137, motion on the floor is to dismiss. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes, and 2137 is dismissed. Takes us in to 2138. And Tracy, would you read the summary, please?
Yes. Case 2138, the complainant is Barbara Tipton, and the respondent is Randy Aronson, DVM. On August 12, 2020, Chloe, a 14 and a half year old female standard poodle, was presented to respondent to have a cancerous oral masses debulk. A dental and a third mass removal located on the right jugular furrow was to be performed at that time as well. During the procedure, the dog became hypotensive and hypoxic, therefore the respondent was not comfortable continuing with the actual mass removal and the dental radiograph and recovered the dog. The dog recovered uneventfully, and the dog was discharged later that day. Histopathology revealed that oral masses were malignant melanomas. On September 15, 2020, the dog was presented to Arizona Animal Hospital to have the oral masses debulked again. The masses had spread to both sides of the mandible and lymphatics. Complainant was advised that debulking the masses was not curative, but an attempt to improve the dog's quality of life. On October 15, 2020, Arizona Animal Hospital debulked more of the masses, which were now causing a partial obstruction of the oropharynx. And the committee concluded that no violation of the practice act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded. The board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
All right, we have no respondent. Mr. Stoll monitoring?
Yes, sir.
No complainant. And Dr. Wright is the lead.
So, again, going through this and looking at the medical portion, I'm not seeing any statute violations or anything that I can find that is going to warrant anything going further on this. So, I'd make a motion to dismiss this as a violation.
Second.
There's a motion on the floor and a second to dismiss 2138 with no violation. Is there any further discussion? I guess I would just throw in there for the record, if anybody's going to listen to the recording later on, the complaints seem to revolve around that she thought the veterinarian did not remove a mass. But she herself submitted the histology report of the two masses. So, where did she think he got those?
So, it's
obvious, yes, he removed two masses. He explained the third mass to her in detail. But I mean, the dog was having respiratory problems, needed to be taken off the, taken out of out from under anesthesia, and he did it and saved the dog, and gets a complaint filed against him for skipping the dog. Anyway, motion on the floor is to dismiss, and we do have a second, correct?
Yes.
Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? That motion passes. 2138 is dismissed. Next up is 2140. Tracy, would you receive summary, please?
Yes. Case 2140, the complainant is Dana Amsla. The respondent is Andrew Tornell, DVM. On September 8, 2020, Lucy, an eight-plus-year-old female pit bull, was presented to North Buckeye Animal Hospital for mass removal and histopathology. The surgery was performed, the masses were submitted for histopathology, and the dog was discharged. On September 14th, 2020, called complainant with the histopathology results and addressed her alleged conduct towards hospital staff, which was requesting that she be respectful. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded. The board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 5-0.
And we have no respondent. Mr. Stoll monitoring?
Yes, sir.
And no complainant. And Ms. Krieger, you are the lead.
Yes, so in this case it was helpful to have the actual recordings of the phone conversation. I will say though, I frankly found it to be awkward and uncomfortable to listen to. I felt that frankly both parties were somewhat rude on the call. I understand where the investigative committee was saying that it was uncomfortable that the vet prolonged this lecture about treating staff respectfully. It was 9 minutes and 17 seconds before he finally started sharing the results. And like I said, it was mostly just uncomfortable to listen to for that long, especially then to bring up that the dog did in fact have cancer. But ultimately, just as the investigative committee determined, I didn't see that there were any violations of the Practice Act. These two were just clearly, butting heads, and, that happens.
And so I, you know, I would make a motion to dismiss this with no violation.
Second.
A motion on the floor and a second to dismiss case number 2140. Ready for the discussion? So, I had to jump through some hoops because I couldn't get it to work on my laptop because it wasn't a format, but I could make it work on my iPad because it was an Apple, I could play on the MyTunes or whatever. So I could listen to it, and I listened to that last, you know, right before I wrote my notes, and my little, because she threatened the veterinarian that she was recording this call.
Right.
And so I got my little jokes on her. He's got both calls.
Right, right.
And I guess I was not I was very impressed with it.
I
was very impressed with his tutorial to her on being respectful. He never raised his voice. He wasn't nasty with her. He wasn't rude. He did not hold her hostage, even though she tried to intimate that he was holding the lab result hostage. He wasn't. He was waiting for her to listen. She was not listening to him.
Right, and I get
so,
that, but I
enjoyed it. I thought he did a great job. And I thought the receptionist did a great job too.
I'm just not sure he was ever gonna get through to her in the way I think he was trying to, because she very clearly felt
but
that
he gave
she
it
was
every
wrong,
attempt.
So.
He gave it every attempt, and it's all on her now.
Right, and again, you have the initial recording where I did feel that she was rude to the staff member.
Oh, yeah.
And they
who
never
was condescending? It was the owner.
They never once
who
said,
the staff?
You know, if they had said, we'll get back to you, you know, within a few hours, but they really, you know, they said by the end of the day.
Yeah.
And so there was never, you know.
Yeah, so anyway, I just had to throw that there. I wondered when I read the IC's concerns about the communication, that were they listening to the same thing I was listening to? And but, I mean, after hearing you and I have different opinions how
I mean,
it went. So
yeah, I still felt it was a little bit awkward, but then at the end,
sometimes
the
getting out of your comfort zone is a good place to go.
The complainant was the one who actually brought it up again at the end of the phone call for several minutes, and then of course hung up. And whenever you hang up on someone, that's
a lot. So. He was very controlled, very measured. I mean, didn't use that. I couldn't have had that conversation without you hearing some up and down in my voice, some hitting some inflection here and there. Right? There's no way. And this guy, he was smooth. I was impressed. All right, motion on the floor is to dismiss 2140. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? That motion passes. 2140 is dismissed. I'm a minute early, but I'm going to call the break now instead of 10:20. She's actually got it in my agenda here. So, okay, Jim, here's when you can go to the bathroom. We'll take a break.
Yes, this is Ms. Jennifer.
Hi, Ms. Dorian.
How